This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Next, we are following up on yesterday's lively discussion about the saga of Jihadi Jack. He is now exclusively our problem since the UK revoked his citizenship. His family and others have undertaken a campaign to bring him back here to face justice. Now, actually, the phrase bringing him back here is a bit of a misnomer. He is Canadian by virtue of his father's citizenship, but has only been to our country 7 times in his life, and that apparently would make it harder to make a case here. Meantime, the government doesn't seem to be in any hurry to move on his case, but that could change after the election. Now, I have a bunch of questions about the legalities around this. So, yes, I want to hear from you. The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. But right now, let's go to Kent Roach, Director of the Global Counterterrorism Law and Policy Group, and Scott Newark, Adjunct Professor in the Terrorism Risk and Security Studies Program at the School of Criminology at Simon Fraser University. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Okay. Now, so here is my first question. I originally thought that this was simply a case. He was a dual Canadian-British national. The Brits kind of beat us to it. But would we have had the right legally to revoke his citizenship? Because I gather there was a Harper-era law that Justin Trudeau repealed. So would we have been able to revoke his citizenship if we moved before Britain or not? Let's start with Kent Roach.
Well, no, I mean, not under the changes to the Citizenship Act. And, you know, although some people may be concerned about that, I would just ask them, you know, where does this all lead? I mean, is this just who can, as quickly as possible, make this person another country's problem? But it is, you know, on my understanding of the law, it would not be possible to take away his citizenship. Now, that doesn't mean that he'll be coming to Canada anytime soon. There's separate laws concerning passports and so on. So, but I don't think we could have stripped his citizenship under the law as it was amended.
Scott, do you agree with that reading of the law?
Yes. The one twist to it, however, is, and this is sort of the political angle of it, both Canada and the United Kingdom and most countries around the world also are parties to an agreement that says in making decisions about stripping people of their citizenship, and there are grounds for that under our existing legislation, that we will not make a person stateless. And so what the British have effectively done is taken somebody who, let's face it, was born in the UK, was raised in the UK, was radicalized in the UK, you know, left there to go to ultimately to Syria. They revoked his citizenship and essentially have just dropped the ball on us. And that is what makes the sort of the political angle of this, and it's what was reflected, I think, in Minister Goodale's expression of, quote, disappointment, is that, you know, and both countries and many countries around the world were not dealing effectively, in my opinion, with this very difficult situation of, you know, our, quote, citizens who have jihadis detained abroad. What's made it the particular news is, I think, as they say, the British kicking us under the bus, and now it's up to us to decide how to deal with this.
Well, exactly. Now, here is my next question. So what I have read in many places, excuse me, is that we are under no obligation to bring him back. Is that true or false, Kent Roach?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone is expecting us to go and take him out of Syria, where he's detained by, I gather, Kurdish authorities. I think, you know, you might see, and we saw this in the Omar Khadr case, is that you might see some litigation saying that there's some reasonable expectation that Canada would at least ask for him to be returned, but we haven't seen that yet. So I think, more or less it is the status quo.
Okay, next, the next thing...
Can I just comment on that for a sec?
Sure.
There is a legal obligation enforced by a Supreme Court ruling that says that a Canadian has the right to, in effect, re-enter Canada. So even if we had the concerns about that, if he somehow showed up at the border, you know, at an airport, he would be let into the country, and then we'd have to deal with that reality. What there isn't, however, is an obligation on the part of Canada to facilitate his return to Canada. And that's why I think what you're seeing is essentially us, you know, sticking our heads in the sand and not taking action and saying, oh, well, no, we can't do this. It's too dangerous. Yet at the same time, you know, journalists like Stuart Bell are able to go there and interview the guy, but oh, no, it's too dangerous for our people to do it? That's ridiculous.
Okay, but, you know, my understanding, again, is that assuming that nobody wants him to come back, the only danger in that happening is if the Syrian government or whoever, whoever that might be, whatever that might be in that area, deports him.
Yeah, it's also the fact that there is, a legitimate concern about what happens. What's the long-term risk if we just ignore it and leave him there? There are already concerns being expressed about ISIS, in effect, regaining some influence in some of these detention centers where the wives and children are being held. The Kurds have made it absolutely clear they don't have the resources to hold on to these people. The reason why I think we should intervene and countries around the world should intervene is because it's in our own best interest to do so. Because what we're effectively doing is quite likely creating the next generation of jihadis. And we do have some tools in our toolbox domestically. It's important to point out that, you know, information about what he did, and that's less than entirely clear. There's a difference between information and admissible evidence, but we have other tools here like terrorism peace bonds that could be applied. But my overall take on this is out of our own self-interest of security and not just leaving him there as opposed to some kind of, you know, sympathy for this individual for what he did.
Well, right, but then there's the question, who's to say that he wouldn't come here with a jihadi risk? I mean, if there's a risk of him rejoining ISIS or doing whatever, I mean, he's a long way away. He's in Syria.
I agree with Scott that, you know, simply, you know, leaving this to see how the Kurds are or are not able to deal with this issue is probably not in our self-interest and certainly not in Mr. Lett's self-interest. And we do have, tools to deal with this. Unfortunately, in some ways, the UK probably has better tools.
Yes.
Because in 2015, they enacted a new kind of control order regime that allows for kind of a staged reentry back into the UK society. But they've now kind of gone contrary to this by taking away citizenship, I think, to over 120 people, including, you know, a 15-year-old who misguidedly went to Syria to become an ISIS bride. So, I mean, you know, in some ways, this probably should be the UK's problem. The UK is probably better legally equipped to deal with this, although there are no easy legal answers, but they've kind of punted it over to our problem. And, you know, I think this is the problem with citizenship stripping generally, is it's just kind of a, you know, we're going to punt the problem to the other country, and the first past the post in stripping citizenship thinks that they've kind of gotten rid of the problem. And it's, you know, it's kind of ironic because the UK has a lot more experience dealing with terrorism, dealing with radicalization. They have more developed programs than we do. And so it is unfortunate that the UK has treated us and Mr. Letts the way that they have.
Okay, here is another question. My understanding is that if Canada decided to bring him back, the statute that he would be most likely to get a conviction on would be leaving Canada to join a terror group. But he didn't leave Canada.
He
left the UK. So if that's the main avenue that we could get him on, it seems closed. Scott?
Yes, and I think perhaps Justin Trudeau needs you to brief him on that. I watched his press conference yesterday, and he just completely vacuous about that issue. And actually, one of his own MPs, John McKay, who, full disclosure, is an old friend of mine, is the chair of the House National Security Committee, pointed that out as well, too. The offense that's in our criminal code is, as you said, leaving Canada. Well, he didn't leave Canada. He left the United Kingdom. And whether we would have sufficient evidence, and again, there's a difference between information and admissible evidence, is questionable. I don't know that because I don't know the details of what information we actually have about him. But we do have other tools, which are these preventive orders I've spoken of, preventive reconnaissances, Section 810.011, where essentially it's if we've got the grounds to reasonably believe that he may commit a terrorist offense, you can get a court order that's like a probation order, that if you breach the conditions of it, that's a crime and you can go to jail. So it's got very, very broad sort of supervision provisions that are authorized in it, and I suspect that's something that we could actually use. And if we could finally get proactive on this stuff and get a unit over there, you know, perhaps a deal with him, his family's got counsel in Canada, deal with the Kurds and get this going. But simply turning our back on it, in my opinion, is a bad idea, because these future generations of jihadis, and I say this with respect to a lot of the kids that are being held there as well, too, that have Canadian, you know, moms have gone over. We are potentially watching the creation of another generation of jihadis if we do nothing, which our next generation of Canadians will have to fight. So it's in our own self-interest, in my opinion, that we actually take proactive measures.
Yeah, but if we bring the next generation of jihadis here, that's not a good thing either.
No, but just because we bring them here doesn't mean we leave them with the same parents that were stupid enough to bring them over there or to go over in the first place. We have very extensive child welfare laws, and I think Professor Roach may have mentioned the Cotter case, the Omar Cotter case. That's one of the things that struck me. I had a lot of involvement in it. We knew what the Cotter family was doing, and we did nothing in the sense of removing those kids from their parents who were radicalizing them into a death cult. We have to not make those kinds of mistakes in the future going forward.
I don't know. Kent Roach, do you agree with that? I mean, the question that I have is that, again, if the clearest law that we have to prosecute him wouldn't work, I don't get why we are in such a hurry to bring him back and then
I agree that the issue of admissible evidence is a live one, but, you know, we have 15 different terrorism offenses in the criminal code, and although I agree that obviously the leaving Canada ones that were enacted in 2013 when, you know, in some ways Canada was ahead of the foreign terrorist fighter curve, wouldn't apply. The participation in the activity of a terrorist group offense, which is where the vast majority of terrorism prosecutions take place, does apply outside Canada. So like most countries, we've asserted jurisdiction. So although he obviously couldn't be prosecuted for leaving Canada, it is possible, you know, bracketing this issue of admissible evidence, that we could prosecute him for participating in the activity of a terrorist group, because obviously Daesh or ISIL is a terrorist group. But, you know, I think, you know, certainly in terms of foreign terrorist fighters, you have to take each each case on its own, so kind of blanket pronouncements, either that we will prosecute or not prosecute. All returnees are probably not appropriate. Similarly, blanket pronouncements that will have peace bonds for everyone or not may not necessarily be appropriate.
But, okay, so we're just about out of time. I just have a yes or no question. Pretty clear. Nobody's moving on this before the election. If the Liberals are reelected, Scott Newark, do you think they'll bring him back or just leave it?
I think that they should take proactive steps, and whatever that ultimately, you know, ends up in, so be it. And I agree, there's not a one-size-fits-all on here. But so far, they have been reluctant to take any proactive measures, and the Conservatives are now talking as though they won't either.
Kent Roach, yes or no? Will they do it?
No. I unfortunately, I think this is too much of a political hot potato, and I doubt any government will touch it.
Okay. On that note, thank you so much to Kent Roach and Scott Newark.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.